It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Cool. So yeah, Treasure and I are getting really worried about quarantining, so we have moved to a more isolated location. Behind me there, you can see. The Wi-Fi is not as good, so if it gets weird, that'll be why. But in general, I mean, you know, lots of social distancing.
Do you worry about the gators at all?
I worry about something under the water. I'm not sure it's gators. I don't see. There's a lot of different stories about legally whose borders the house is in. It's a very sort of gray area for several countries. So,
gotcha.
I don't know if gators are common for this area, but something is making bubbles down there, and it's not good.
What about skeeters? I mean, you could get some other kind of disease.
I mean, skeeters are everywhere.
That's true.
You're always gonna have skeeters.
Yeah, that's true.
My brain has gone into vapor lock.
Why is that?
Too much stuff in it.
What do you mean?
I mean that there's been a lot of things that have had me pondering a lot of stuff and very thoughtful, and it's just too much in there at once. And none of it was like important stuff until today. Things are happening at my company. They are doing things to tighten the belt, as it were. And there's been some pretty big structural shifts. And yeah, I might be working less or not at all for a while, or I don't know. We're going to have to see. I'm not thinking too much about that one. But I already had a bunch of stuff in my head, so that really kind of just made everything go. No, I don't know what it is. So many things lately. And it's all like weird metaphysical, like none of it's important. It's like from video games and shows I'm watching and stuff, but it just got me pondering a lot of things. So my brain has been feeling very, very, very heavy.
Well, like what? Do you want to talk about any of it or?
But we have things we have to do first. Excuse me. I've been taking melatonin the last couple of nights.
Has that been helping?
And magnesium. I think it's been doing something. So the first night I take it. It's a 3-milligram supplement, and I take it an hour before I plan to try and go to sleep because that's what it said.
Yep.
And so I do that, and then I go to sleep an hour later, but I don't sleep. And so I read for a bit, and I don't sleep, and I read again. But when I read again, I feel very tired, and like I'm having a hard time focusing on the words. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, that's a sign I should stop, and I stop. But I'm still not falling asleep. So finally, I'm like, fuck it, and I get up. And I get up for about an hour, and I realize I feel weird. Like I feel drugged.
Oh, really?
I feel very like fuzzy and things, like I'd been drinking a bit or something. It was very odd. And I went back, but because I started this process so early, that night I basically ended up getting an actual solid 8 hours of sleep.
Oh.
So that was good.
Yeah.
So last night, I took it 2 hours before I went to bed, because it seemed that an hour afterwards it hadn't really been doing much yet. So I took it earlier, and I went to bed, and I still had trouble falling asleep, but not enough that I bothered with reading or anything like that. So I'm going to say I probably only managed about 7 hours last night, but it still was pretty solid. So I mean, I think I'm still going to do it for now. And see, I think it's doing something, but it's a little early to tell.
Are you taking magnesium for the same reason?
I'm taking magnesium for muscle relaxation because Trish read that it can help with the Jimmy legs, restless leg syndrome.
Yes, I've heard that too.
And I'm not bothered by restless leg syndrome, but my wife is bothered by restless leg syndrome, and it's my legs. So, what the heck?
Yep.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world with the heaviest brains of any podcast. Weigh them for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Figure it out. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 400.
Seriously?
480?
Yes. 480. You and I knew this, and I can't even count that high. Heavy brain.
480.
For those of you who have never joined us before, we both live in isolated shacks. You can see the inside of his, the outside of mine. And this is our only contact with the outside world. It's mostly a show where we teach people how to make improvised explosive devices, for whatever use they have. We don't judge or suggest. If you want to blow something up on the cheap, we're your guys. No, none of that is true. We have a hat. It's magical. That's true. in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, good people out there, people who are probably listening right now, excuse me, I wasn't yawning before this, I swear. People, write in to that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. And once again, I mean, we should be on YouTube and everything now that we're getting this. Somebody commented on one of our videos lately and I think subscribed, and I don't know who they are. Also, when somebody subscribes to your YouTube channel, you only get to see who it is if they've made it public. We have 11 subscribers and only 4 of them have made it public, and the 4 of them are all expected, like people I would expect to be on there.
What did the commenter say?
I don't remember. Something positive, but fairly generically positive, if I'm honest. And they had a banana avatar.
No. Oh. So, I don't know what that means.
I think there was a name on there, but it wasn't a name I recognized, so maybe you would know it. You're always getting weird friends to listen to our podcast.
I guess.
Maybe it was my massage therapist. She supposedly listens now.
Oh? Have you been back?
Or no, we haven't been able to, although hopefully next week.
Oh, okay, good.
She's called and she's talked, and her hours have had to change and stuff like that, but she's doing it, and they got a lot of protocols, and we discussed all that. And actually, we discussed my level of social distancing, because she's checking that out with all the customers, because that'll make a difference. So, all right. So, how has your week been?
I mean, not a lot to talk about. You might know that HBO Max is a thing now?
Yes, I'm pissed off.
Finally here. Why?
Because I can get it for free because I have HBO now. There are two major platforms that don't have it. Amazon Fire and Roku. So it's not showing up on my friggin' TV.
Oh, well.
I could use my PlayStation to look at it, so I might do that. We'll see.
There were two things we saw that we didn't realize it was going to have in it. Well, we knew it was going to have it, but we didn't know it was going to have it the way they have it. The Warner Brothers cartoons, they have classic Warner Brothers cartoons going back to like the very first Warner Brothers cartoon or something.
Ooh, I mean, so like the real racist ones.
Well, I see, that's the thing. I'm not sure about those. I'm not sure if they've taken some out, but there's a ton of them in there. Probably some that I actually haven't seen. So I might somewhere down the line be looking into that. But another thing they have is they have every single Sesame Street going back to 1969.
No way.
Yeah.
Do they have the one where Buffy St. Cloud breastfeeds on air and Big Bird says that he thought it seemed nice?
I mean, if that is an episode, it must be there.
It is an episode.
I would think.
Folk singer Buffy St. Clair breastfed on camera and explained it to Big Bird.
Do you know when that was?
70s. Well, I want to say 72, but I don't know.
It's probably there. I'm probably going to watch a lot of those too. I mean, you know, I
mean, there's a lot of letters and numbers that you don't know yet. So I think that's probably good. And you've never been good on near versus far.
Yeah. I really need practice on that
one.
But you know, as I always say, when I was little, I was a big Warner Brothers cartoon fan and a big Muppets fan. And the thing is, you know, there's a lot of Muppets that are, they're not like on the Muppet Show. They're only on Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And some of their best gags are on Sesame Street. Like the Muppet Show, as cool as it was, they didn't have a comedy duo act like, you know, Abbott and Costello. They didn't have that on the Muppet Show, but you had Bert and Ernie on Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And there's some great gags there. You know, Cookie Monsters on Sesame Street, Grover's on Sesame Street.
No, there's a lot, like, there's both Sesame Street and Muppet Show, complete lack of Skeksis. But if you watch Dark Crystal, they're all in there.
Right. What I'm saying.
I mean, you gotta.
And I'm a big fan of.
I don't know about the Gelfling situation.
I'm a big fan of Kermit
Scooter
the Frog.
Was Scooter a Gelfling?
No, I'm a big fan of Kermit the Frog, and Kermit's best stuff is on Sesame Street. On the Muppet Show, he's a very particular kind of character, and he does very particular kinds
he's
of things.
He's busy. He's got work to do.
But
he's running that whole show.
That's right. And which I love. I love that. That's one of the reasons he's my favorite Muppet. But when the sketches he gets to do are mostly on Sesame Street. So
and it's usually being a reporter.
Yep.
Or screwing with children.
Well, and all of Grover's thing where he's a waiter or whatever.
Those are great. The waiter sketches with Grover are good.
Yeah,
and Grover also spends a lot of time screwing with children.
Well, and the thing is, too, that when Sesame Street doesn't have things that are Muppet stuff, like they have little animated shorts and whatever, some of those are pretty
good. Can't tell hero by his size. I'm just a teeny little super guy. I was literally singing that in the shower 2 days ago.
So I might watch a lot of Sesame Street. Old school.
I mean, that tracks.
I mean, as soon as it starts getting into Elmo territory, I'll probably quit.
Right. I mean,
not my thing.
I have such raging ambivalence towards Elmo on a variety of levels, including a lot of the history of the guy who does Elmo. And yeah, no, but.
Well, Elmo seems to veer into Grover's lane, and I don't like that.
Well, and I was just the age where, when Elmo happened, I was just at the age that I was just barely aware of Sesame Street anymore, and so I was pissed off that they were changing something.
Oh.
So, like, I was absolutely at the age where, like, fuck that new guy. Like, that was my... Joel versus Mike on Mystery Science Theater. That was my switching Darrens on Bewitched. Elmo, I was like, who the fuck is this little red Grover with the really jarring voice who's now running everything?
So I don't, yeah. Probably, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I went to a puppeteering convention while we worked at Applied.
Again, that makes sense.
And one of our coworkers
turned out to be a puppet.
No, it was a big fan of Big Bird. And I think I knew that there was going to be some Henson stuff down there or something. But anyway, she asked me to
get Big Bird's autograph.
I think she asked me to get a feather from Big Bird. I think she actually asked me to do that.
That might count as a hate crime.
Well, I mean, I think she was kind of joking, right?
You did it, didn't you?
Well, when I got down there, there was a little, there was a section where there were some Sesame Street puppets on display, and their Big Bird was there, you know, sitting on a chair or something. And it so happened one of his yellow feathers had fallen on the floor.
It so happened, huh?
I'm telling you, it wasn't even in the roped area. Like, I didn't have to break any rules at all.
Officer, this VCR fell off a truck when it was driving by my house. I swear.
I didn't have to go in the roped area. I didn't have to reach over there. Nope, it was right there
on
the
floor. He did, but it was purely for fun.
Where I could easily get it, I just picked it up and took it.
Are there any witnesses?
None you would trust, my wife.
Your current wife?
Yes.
I might trust her.
Okay, well, she can tell you.
Right.
And, you know, you'd think me
I
being
want her to
such...
tell me alone, though, because I don't want it to be like a, he's crazy, and I don't want to disrupt his delusion.
Now, being the fan of the Muppets today, and I like Big Bird. I'm a fan of Big Birds. You'd think I would have thought, well, I didn't even think I was going to get a Big Bird feather, so there's no way I'm even going to tell this coworker of mine that I even got it.
Oh, no, but 100% you're giving it to your coworker.
I did. How'd you know?
Because you're you. In general, a halfway decent person, if somebody's like, could you get me a feather of Big Bird? And you're like, that's not happening. And then the universe puts one in your hand. Like, you're kind of an asshole if you don't give it to them. But beyond that, like, I don't think you believe in owning possessions if you think somebody else might want them. Like, it's like, oh, if I don't give this person my stuff, they'll be less happy than they are. So I gotta do that to feed the gnawing hole in my chest that tells me I'm not good enough 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Here, take this money.
Okay, well, sure.
I gave
it to the person. I didn't even I didn't even think of keeping it for myself until just now.
Like, without a doubt. Like, I'm messing with you in that I do believe your story. If at this point you had said you kept it, I would have called bullshit. I would have been like, you are lying.
Because the reason I was thinking of it just now was because...
Unless I saw actual tears while you were telling me.
I didn't think that you would believe me if I didn't have it, but I don't have it because I gave it.
Of course not.
But you know, another thing I could have done while I was there is if I wanted
ripped another one off and taken the beak.
I could have... There was nobody there. Nobody would have known.
You could have just fireman carried the whole goddamn bird and run for the door.
Maybe not that. But I could have taken as many feathers probably as I wanted, you know, without taking too many. That, you know, where there'd be a bald spot or whatever. No,
hey, Bert, you notice how Big Bird's got this bald patch in the back? Ernie, we're not talking about that. It was a terrible incident in Iowa.
It wasn't in Iowa. It was in Fort Lauderdale.
Sorry, my joke doesn't work then.
No, yeah, I mean...
Actually...
I mean, there might have been more just on the floor there, and I didn't even...
You haven't been to a Disney park since they bought the Muppets, have you?
Well, I mean, you know, they had a Muppet attraction in Walt Disney World. They've had one for years.
The Muppet 3-Day Spectacular?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have seen that, because I love that attraction.
Oh, yeah, me too. I don't know if it's still there, though.
It is. I mean, it was as of the last time I went, which was like 2 years ago.
Oh, because I mean, that's... I mean,
no,
that's
I've been on it. I went twice. It was great.
Okay, I hope we're talking about the same thing.
You go into a theater, and they show you a show, and it's in 3D.
And Jim Henson is voicing Kermit. It's like that old.
Okay.
I mean, is it? No, I'm asking.
I have no idea.
Oh.
I couldn't tell you a different Kermit voice from another if you paid me.
Oh, I bet you could. But
I could probably tell you that's not the one I heard a minute ago. I don't think I could pick Jim Henson out of a vocal lineup.
Okay.
I don't know what you'd call a vocal lineup.
Anyway,
right. Kermit, I'm probably say, gonna watch. Give me your money and don't try anything funny. Number one. All right, number two. Give me your money.
So I'll probably be watching Sesame Street. And I'll probably be watching old Warner Brothers cartoons. They're making new ones. I'll probably watch some of those too to see if they're any good, but I don't think I'll like them. But I might like them. I don't know. Because, you know what? I never watched those things that Spielberg made, those Looney Tunes. What were they called?
Oh, Tiny Toons?
Yeah, I never watched those.
Tiny Toons is solid. You should watch Tiny Toons.
Well, the ones I've seen were pretty good, yeah, but I didn't know.
Do they have Animaniacs?
I didn't look, but...
And here's the one, Slim Hope, but do they have Hysteria?
I didn't.
Nobody seems to have Hysteria, which sucks because Hysteria was one of the greatest shows ever.
Well, man, maybe they will have these things.
But it hasn't been available anywhere. I know they got a lock on some Miyazaki, which I'm excited about.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah.
I think they're the sole U.S. distributor streaming for Ghibli stuff.
Yeah, it's like my neighbor Totoro or whatever, that thing you always talk about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They've got that. They've got all the Studio Ghibli stuff.
Good.
They don't have... They don't have Batman the Animated Series because
on the DC? Because the DC one still exists.
Yeah, but why should that even matter? I mean, why couldn't it be in both places? I mean, who cares?
You need to... If everything's in both places, there's no incentive for anybody to buy the other one. So you have to have some exclusivity.
Yeah, but...
Why they picked that one, I don't know.
Because there's other... DC stuff on HBO Max.
Yeah, Doom Patrol's on there. I'm kind of excited about that.
Yeah, Doom Patrol.
And the real answer probably has to do with, even when it's all technically the same company, there's like licensing agreements with subsidiaries and crap.
Right.
So.
Yep, you're right.
Which means maybe in a year it shows up.
But they've got that movie that's based on the animated series. They've got the Return of the Joker. No, I'm sorry. That's Batman Beyond Return of the Joker.
Yes. Do they have that? I love that.
Yeah.
That movie's amazing to me. And I don't like any of that shit.
They've got a lot of old movies, too. And then, you know, the fact of the matter is we already had HBO Now just because of, like, Barry and...
Yeah, no, we've got HBO Now, yeah.
And...
We watch a fair number of movies on it. They got a lot of good stuff there. But, yeah, Avenue 5, Righteous Gemstones, Watchmen... We didn't ever do after
Jack.
First.
Did you ever watch Gentleman
Jack? Gentleman Jack is on our list.
That's pretty good. It's really good. So, yeah, we were already on it. I mean, what we did was we weren't on it for a little while. We let it run out or something. And then we were going to get back on it to watch something. And then the whole HBO Max thing happened. And we're like, well, how does it work? Do we get it? And it goes over automatically. So then there was this kind of an offer in the last 6 weeks or something where you could sign up for HBO Now at a reduced price and it would automatically go to HBO Max later.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what's happening with us is that it's going to automatically go. And in theory, it has. We just can't watch it on our TV through the smart TV interface. Like I said, I could turn on the PlayStation and watch it, I'm sure. And well, I will probably this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I encourage you to do it because I think you'll find some cool stuff. And there's a lot of horror offerings, lots of them.
Nice. Warner Brothers and Universal makes a lot of horror.
Yep. So, I mean, we explored it quite a bit when it was finally out. But, you know, when my wife's going through anything like Netflix or anything like that, she's like scrolling through. My eyes can't take it. So I'm sure there were a lot of things I didn't see. I just kind of had to let her, you know, with my eyes closed, do whatever.
Yeah.
That same day, they were supposed to launch the Crew Dragon from Florida.
And rocket. Yeah.
And I got scrubbed because I was
trying to figure out what video streaming service was Crew Dragon.
No, they were supposed to launch, and there was pre-launch footage.
Supposedly did it today. Now, did they do it today?
No, it's Saturday. They'll do it.
Oh, okay. I thought the new date was today. All right, so Saturday.
So hopefully, I mean, this is going to be the first time we've launched from the United States, and this is a United American, you know, rocket with an American capsule, and it's SpaceX, you know, so it's Elon Musk's company, whatever.
So it's got a car on top of it.
Yeah, and this is the first time we've launched since 2011, when the space shuttle program was closed down. So it's kind of a big deal, and the inside of the capsule is completely different, you know. It's because they've got these three touch screens the astronauts have. So the control aspects of the capsule aren't buttons and lights and things like you usually see. It's completely different. I'm a little worried that something's not going to work with the whole touchscreen thing for some reason. I mean,
and you hope there's a backup plan.
Well, they also have some buttons on the bottom to override certain things. So yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking. It's like, wow, is this? I mean, this is the first time. That this rocket and capsule has been to the, because it goes.
Yeah, it lands back down and all
by itself and everything. So it's been to this station many times. So there's not really any reason to think anything could go wrong. But this is the first time human beings have been in it while it goes up and stuff. It's like, wow. But yeah, they had to scrub it because there was too much electrical activity, not lightning, but like ionization in the atmosphere. So they had to scrub it. Are you interested in that kind of thing? I mean, do you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, the reason I'm distracted is for some reason a half hour into this, the multi-factor authentication on this computer decided to call me to verify it was me. And it had called me when I first booted up, so I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Anyway, how was your week? You guys will get onto that.
Weird.
Wasted enough time.
Weird. So I'm like 80 hours into No Man's Sky. And I'm basically done with the main plot line.
Oh, okay.
Partially because I found it very interesting, but also partially I got something that unlocked certain new areas. And in those areas are these terminals that will give you more backstory and lore and stuff like that. But you can't access them until you have a specific item.
Right.
And I was told from what I looked up that you get that item from a certain part in the main quest.
Right.
And so I've been doing that so I can get that, because I'm loving the lore. I compare this game a lot to a lot of other open world games, most of the Bethesda ones, you know, the Elder Scrolls games, the Fallout games, and it is a fairly fair comparison. It's different. It's bigger and also more homogeneous because it is all procedurally generated.
Right.
So there is that factor. But in general, it's a very similar thing. There's lots of cool shit to build. There's lots of cool shit to explore. There's fair number of quests nowadays and missions and stuff like that. And you can do as much as you want and not. And a lot of people, I think, play the game and don't really bother with the quests too much because you don't need to. And you can do a ton of shit for hours and hours and hours and hours. I'm really fascinated by the story, a lot of which seems to have been added on later. Like, these quests contain lore that I don't think was part of the original game, but the story they have created is fascinating to me. I mean, and you start off, you don't know who you are or where you are. I think we've discussed this, and your wife played it, and there's just a spaceship and it's broken and you got to do a couple things to fix it, and then you can fly, and then, you know, and the first couple of quests and things are sort of just getting your feet on the ground, but you still don't know who you are. And there's three different kinds of aliens.
Yep.
There's the big mean ones. There's the little turtle cat looking ones who are big mercantile guys. And there's the artificial life forms.
Yep.
Who are big into studying science and stuff like that. And that's fun because you don't speak their language, and slowly you learn more words to it and you can understand them more. And that's kind of cool. But these are the only three species in the galaxy. Except you're not any of these.
Yeah, that's right.
And the game from jump has this weird, all this weird mystery stuff happen. You get these weird signals that are like, you are not alone. And you get the number 16 is a motif that shows up constantly and you don't know why. And you find out also that there is another thing in the galaxy. There's Sentinels, and they're these little robots that basically consider themselves guardians of the galaxy and will blow the shit out of you if they see you doing anything terrible, like mining resources or being where you shouldn't or anything like that.
Right.
And you learn about something called Atlas.
Yeah.
But Atlas is not explained really well. It seems to be sort of like God, but it's not really, it's hard to tell. And there's quests you can go on to learn more about Atlas. And I did, and that was really intense and fun, and I loved that. And eventually, some of these signals you get, you find out are from a person who thinks they know you, even though you don't remember who you are. Huh. And you try and seek them out. And in the process, you find other people, and you find this place. It's in mechanical terms, it's the multiplayer hub for the game. But in the story, it's essentially a space station that travels through the multiverse into different dimensions. So all the people that are like you, which are called travelers and are a specific type of being, can connect and commune in this one place.
Oh.
Because otherwise you can't, because you're usually just sort of one of you per universe. And so that's fascinating. And there's people who run it, and you get their history, which is amazing, because not all of them are travelers, and how they came to it is very cool. And you need to find your friend, and it turns out your friend is sort of trapped, and you have to go through a thing to try and save them. And that takes some freaky twists and turns and gets really intense and really dark in places. There are a lot of spots in this game where it gets kind of dark. And you go through all that, and eventually you meet other people who were in their life and in your life. And along the way, you can run into travelers in other places, and they talk about how they know me, and a different iteration of me, like, helped them, or like we were a couple at one point and things like that, because apparently you get sort of rebooted over and over again.
Oh.
And you quickly get the whole feeling that you're some sort of weird chosen one and things like that. But eventually I got into this whole thing where I really, like, I had to go and learn the history of the different races, which was fascinating and frankly chilling in some cases, and basically figure out what's happening in the universe and what to do about it. And it was, I'm not going to say they covered any new territory, but the writing is goddamn poetic. It's really impressive writing, and it's really evocative and emotional. And I've had things there, this game made me make decisions that after I made them, I had to put the game down for a while.
Huh.
Because it was really intense. And then recently I've gotten to where sort of I know what's going on, full stop. And now the only thing for me to do is to go to the center of the galaxy, which is where the game, you know, you sort of decide the fate of things. And unlike originally when the game came out, going to the center of the galaxy was always a thing, but it took you like an average of 2,300 warps to get there.
Mm-hmm.
The game has simplified things via this quest line where I do, it's going to be like 11 warps. So, because that's kind of insane. Even though people have done it, some people, when the game first came out, just bought a ship and hooked it up to have the best hyperdrive capabilities and then just plugged on to the center of the galaxy. But, like, it's really intense. And I find my, and like, other people, and I mean, I do it too, you get into a book, you get into a movie, you get into a TV show, you care about them like they're real people. You know they're not, but you care about them like they're real people. I get that with video games a lot.
Yeah.
I get deep into it. And this one, like, I figured stuff out, and it was great and terrible in a very traditional sense of both words, and sort of awe-inspiring and bleak at the same time. And I went back to that stupid multiplayer hub, and you can see the other characters. You can't talk to people, but there's like little motions you can do. But I can see the, and I know they're just other players doing all the stuff there. And I find myself going like, how many of them have reached this point and know what's actually going on?
Yeah.
But in my head, it's like literally like how many of my fellow travelers know what's really happening And is that a blessing or like I got deep into it and it's still kind of, and I mean, I couldn't handle it. So I had to wiki a lot of stuff about what's going to happen before I made my decisions. Cause it's kind of freaky and I don't know. I'll probably get, I haven't been playing it much for the last couple of days for this reason, but it's just, it's put a lot of existential shit in my head really heavily.
Okay.
And on top of that, I've been watching, you know, I watch the Dropouts D&D live games.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this one. I don't remember if I talked about it or not, called The Unsleeping City. And it's a single season campaign and it's set in New York City.
Yeah. You were talking about it. You thought when you first heard about it, that it would just have a lot of in jokes about New York City. Yeah. And you wouldn't be interested, but that it was really good.
The characters are amazing. And the characters specifically, like for some reason, the players really locked into these characters just from the beginning and they really have a sense of them. Their interactions are amazing. But again, there's a lot of heavy stuff here because a lot of them turned out to have these like dark and twisted backstories and things that didn't come out except through play. Mm-hmm. And that has been really fascinating. I mean, that's just very sort of emotional. And I watched a couple of very interesting movies this week. Trish made me watch one. It's on Netflix. It's called Mr. Right. It's not how you spell your name. It's like as opposed to Mr. Left.
Or Mr. Wrong.
Yeah. It's from 2015. She watched it when she was at her parents' house by herself because it absolutely looks like a romantic comedy. And she's like, Tony won't want to see this, so I'll watch it. And then she's like, what the fuck did I just watch? I'm going to have to make Tony watch it. And it's a very original film. It you got to be careful on spoilers with it. It is technically something of a romantic comedy. It's definitely a comedy. And there is a romance central to it. It's sort of like the closest thing Trish came up with is if somebody decided, what if we remade the Bourne Identity, but as a rom-com, while still including all the tropes from both romantic comedies and action movies in one film?
And that makes something good?
It makes something fascinating. It makes something very original. It's got a hell of a cast that carry it. The two leads are Sam Rockwell and Anna Kendrick.
Oh. Yeah.
And, of course, they nail it. Tim Roth is actually in one of the first good castings of him I've seen in ages. Like, usually when he shows up in shit now, I'm like, oh, man, he deserves better than this. But I'm like, this is a part that works very well for him. I kind of recommend – it's a fun movie. You have to get from the beginning that it's a very fantastical movie.
Okay.
Like, it's for a while I was like, okay, suspension disbelief, okay, this way. And then at a certain point I'm like, oh, no, wait, it's just a fantasy film. Never mind. And then it's fine.
Yeah.
Because at a certain point it's like, really? Oh, okay, I get it. This isn't real. All right, then we're fine. But that was it was very interesting and it was very thought-provoking because it was original. And then last night I had happened upon this by complete accident. But I happened upon it every once in a while. It pays off when like you're not moving the Netflix remote. And so it starts playing the trailer for something.
Oh yeah.
And you're like, whoa, what is this? And I had this with a recent documentary on Netflix called Circus of Books. I knew nothing about this and I knew nothing about the subject matter beforehand. This is a movie. It is a documentary film about a fairly nice Jewish couple, heterosexual Jewish couple, who in the 80s, I think, purchased and then ran for 30 plus years in West Hollywood an adult bookstore and hardcore gay porn video store.
So the clientele was gay men? Is that what you're saying?
By the huge majority and the employees and everything. It was an institution in West Hollywood, and it was at a time where all that stuff was still, you know, very taboo and all that. And so there weren't a lot of people selling. But the movie is also very much a portrait of this family because the director of it is their daughter.
Oh.
And they had three kids. And I spent a lot. I really enjoyed the movie, and I highly recommend it, including to you. There are places where there happens to be nudity in it. It's nothing that would be prurient or offensive or anything.
Like, oh, okay.
Unless the concept I just described to you offends you, this is a movie you'll be fine with watching. Anyone. And for a lot of it, I was like, this is just fascinating material. I'm not sure it's a very good documentary. Mm. And a lot of that was the director seemed too involved.
Right. Well,
but by the time it finished, I was like, no, she knew that. And she did it on purpose. I think it was actually a really brilliantly filmed documentary.
Mm. Okay.
And it deals a tremendous, and there's a whole bunch of other people that they interview in all this, including a lot of activists at the time, former big deal gay porn stars, and like where some who still live. I mean, and we discussed, because of course during the middle of this was the huge AIDS crisis,
right?
And the families were, because of course the kids never knew what the place was.
Oh,
their parents very much didn't want them to know because they were worried it would make them ostracized at school and stuff like that. And that's a whole thing. And there's other interesting sort of subplots that appear. And it's very fun and it's very entertaining, but it's fascinating as a look at gay culture at the time, as a look at the war on pornography.
Yeah.
Just as the Reagan era war on pornography, which was a very real and horrible thing. And a look at this family, which is a really interesting family. And like the parents are deeply in love, but vastly different people. I say Jewish couple. He's basically completely non-religious and she's very devout.
Hmm.
And they're very opposite sort of personalities and things. And they have these three kids that are all very different. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. And it gave me a lot to think about. I have to be circumspect because I don't want to give. There was a point in it that meant a lot to me lately. So I'm a bit of a lunatic. Most people who know me as a fairly laid back, relaxed, accepting individual.
Sure.
I spend a lot of time not being like that, but it's all for jokes. People who have known me long enough know me before I was medicated and know that I had quite the temper and would run hot and cold very quickly. And people who know me long enough know that sometimes I lose my shit. And it's lessened over the years as I get older and more mature and as my med levels are good and stuff like that. But it means that amongst even my closest friends today, I've done things that I, like, terrible thing. I've treated them very poorly at times. And, you know, I have lost friends over those kind of things. But, I mean, I've also got some that still are around me and love me and think I'm great and all that. And there's a point in this documentary where we get very, one of the subjects gets very heavy into like the things you can't take back. And it involves relationships that they still maintain. And they're like, and I do better now and I work to that, but it doesn't take away what happened before and nothing will.
Mm.
And that has been on my mind recently. I've had some friends that have been in need of support lately, and you know, I've offered it and they've accepted it and it's very good. But it just sort of reminded me that there's things you fuck up you don't get to fix. And sometimes it's very obvious that you don't get to fix them. But sometimes it's just things that I was really horrible to this person one time, like really horrible. and we talked it out and we resolved it and we are friends again and whatever, that still exists.
Mm.
That didn't go away. And there's not a certain level of goodness that makes up for it. Mm. Ultimately, they decide in the balance if I'm still worth being friends with. And if they're still friends with me, they clearly have decided that. But it doesn't, I don't know. It's akin to that thing where I talk about, like, Bill Cosby was a horrible man for those things that he did. Bill Cosby was also a brilliant comedian who did great things for black people in movies and television and so forth. And both of those things can be true, and neither of them erases the other or counters the other or makes up for the other or anything like that.
Right.
And that's such a hard position to be in, but I think it's very important to understand that and to be okay with that. And that is something that I have been pondering. It's another one of the things that's been heavy in my brain lately. That you don't really fix mistakes. You do better. I mean, sometimes there are literal things you can fix, but it's not like I was bad and now I'm good, so that made up for when I was bad. No, you were bad and now you're good. And you should keep being good.
Yeah.
Which can also be helpful, though, because it means in a lot of times when you make a mistake, it's not over.
Right.
You can make a mistake and it's not – it's long, long – I don't know. Maybe this isn't true for everybody else. But when I was younger, the concept that there could be a married couple and someone would have an affair – to me, by definition, had to mean they were getting divorced.
Hmm.
And nowadays I'm like, no, it means like it's all individualized. Don't get me wrong. I still think in most cases it probably would end up in divorce.
Yeah.
But you're not under obligation for that. And the situation varies. And like Trish and I have talked about, I mean, it's not an issue. I don't in general, but on the scale of things that we could do that would damage our relationship, one of us having a one night stand with someone else is actually fairly low on the list.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that was fascinating to me. And it, again, in the documentary, it's very, very sincere and it's brilliantly edited. There's some lines that are just phenomenal, and they're only phenomenal because you've had an arc that got you to those lines.
Sure, right, yeah.
But at 100%, I believe none of the footage is staged because, frankly, it's clumsy enough. And I don't know what your thoughts are on this. We were talking about sort of the evolution of documentaries, and documentaries originally were supposed to be this unbiased, impartial observer. And the sad truth is that doesn't exist.
No.
That is impossible. And so now you've got that one extreme where you're trying as hard as possible to be an impartial observer. And that's a terrible extreme, again, because it's impossible. And also, in as close as you could get there, it would only work if it was a subject about which you had no interest. Because then you could be super impartial and be like, I'm literally just going to film this and then whatever. But also, like I said, it doesn't exist. Complete impartiality like that doesn't exist. Certainly not for something you've decided to make a film about. And then the other extreme is what I frequently think of Michael Moore in this category, and honestly, maybe Morgan Spurlock, where basically, in my mind at least, you had a point you wanted to make and then sought about collecting material to make a film to get to that point.
Yeah.
And the truth, I think, nowadays is you always will have a bias in making a documentary. And what you have to do is you have to own it and you have to constantly check it and constantly take it into consideration. You have to acknowledge it. Like, you're not going to go in with no bias. So you have to be like, I know this is here, and try and make allowance. It's the same thing as, man, I keep sub-referencing all over the place tonight. See, this is how heavy my brain is right now, how full of shit it is. It's the same thing as you don't say I'm not racist. That's right. Ridiculous. You say I'm racist. You admit that you're racist, or you at least accept the concept. And every day you try and be aware of that and make adjustments for that and make that. Don't be in denial about that. Own it and try and work in that case, try and work against it towards an ideal. In a documentary, I don't think you have to work towards an ideal of impartiality, but I just think you have to be aware of it and take it into account. And I feel like this documentary did a really good job with that.
Well, the problem with being detached for a documentary, it's not even really so much about bias, although you're correct. Biases are always there. There's really not a lot you can do about them. Although you can, as you also have sort of pointed out, you can challenge those biases. You really need to surround yourself with other people, you know, who will check your biases sometimes. Try to pick people in your project that maybe have a different point of view. But the sort of built-in problem with any filmmaking venture is the story is always told in the editing room.
Yeah.
And that's not just true for fiction. That's true for everything.
Yep.
You cannot help but tell the story, a story, in the editing room. It will happen.
Yeah.
So it's by it, you can think you don't have biases, or that you have enough people on your crew that you're going to get rid of some of those biases, but you will tell a story.
Yeah. And especially in documentaries, I'm really aware of the editing. I'm kind of aware of the editing in most things nowadays, but in other things, it's frequently just for narrative consistency. Like in a documentary, I'm like, what is this editing doing to this film?
Right.
Because sometimes the editing is arguing points that I'm like, no, your only argument is careful and clever editing. Like, I don't think the material backs what you're saying. You're just editing it in a way. Yeah, and I mean, we know that on a small scale in news stories and shit like that too. But also, yeah, what is the editing telling us, and how does that compare to what the content in between is telling us?
Yeah.
And I'm always very, and that's the thing here. It felt, the director is a fair part of this story. And the mother, I would say, is possibly the central figure. It's a very big documentary, but the mother is probably the central figure. There is a great deal of tension between the director and the mother. And that was what made me nervous. But by the end, like I said, I think the director was aware of that and owned that and tried to both correct for it and make a point out of that. Like, I think she knew what was happening and was very deliberate about it. Anyway, it's not very long. It's on Netflix. I highly recommend it to anybody. It's just kind of a fun and interesting film too. And I don't know. I think it was made over several years. It came out this year, but there's a lot of things that indicate a lot of the footage. I mean, some of the footage is very clearly like archival when they were kids and stuff like that.
Sure.
But there's evidence that a lot of the like interviewing materials may have been from quite a few years ago. I think this was a long time in coming.
Okay.
But it was really good. But yeah, just so much stuff. Oh, and I finished the Anne Lemke, the ancillary trilogy, which again, huge deconstructions of self and gender and a lot, all put into a really fascinating sci-fi world. Love that, but it puts so much in my head about what relationships mean and what people are to each other. And like, that was in there. Now I'm reading the fifth Discworld book, which I'll admit I'm not enjoying quite as much as the third or the fourth, but I am enjoying it. I do really, and that's just driving me nuts because I'm really losing my mind over all the literary rules he breaks. Like, I was reading in bed the first night I started it, four separate times I had to stop and turn to Trish and be like, listen to this. And she's like, it's actually pretty good. I'm like, it's wonderful. And it's completely cheating.
Right.
He had one where he's trying to describe a building and there's this one part of it. And he's like, well, this part, nothing unusual, that this part should be left to the imagination. It will include, and then he just listed a bunch of shit, some of which in very serious detail, and that was it. And I'm like, that is bullshit. And she's like, no, I have a very clear description of that space now. I'm like, of course you do. It was brilliant, but it's bullshit.
Well, yeah.
He's got a section where he talks about how, like, people get, like, and again, like, his switching on tenses. He talks about how something to most people they don't notice, but it's actually a bad sign. And he says, you notice that, don't you? And that's his section break. And the next sentence is, well, one other person noticed it also. And then we go to a character, like, I hate this man, and he's brilliant, and I'm going to steal so much from him in my own work.
That's a good idea.
Oh, he breaks so many rules, and he does it so well. He's a monster. He's dead. I shouldn't say it, but still. Ooh. Crazy. Okay, we have very little time. I should probably draw something.
Okay.
This one's from Stu, who I don't think is caught up at all, but who is going to be your first virtual guest on the Magical Zooming Hat podcast? I mean, already happened, was the producer.
Yep.
It does beg the question, though. We could do that more. It's a lot easier now to have a guest from anywhere.
True. It's true.
We could see. If you're interested in that kind of, I'm making no guarantees here by any stretch, and I'm making no guarantee of fairness in decisions or anything like that. But if that's a thing you would be down for, tell us in the comments, themagicaltalkinghat.com. It could be something we might entertain. I will say this. If we do entertain it, you're going to have to be on camera like we are right now.
Mm.
So keep that in mind. And again, not guaranteeing I'll do it, not guaranteeing I will be fair at all about deciding who would do it if I do it. I can pretty much guarantee it'll be my call because William never argues anything about logistics with me.
Nope.
William doesn't really think he's on this podcast. William, I think William thinks of himself as an audience member who's just really consistent.
I'm kind of the Ed McMahon of the podcast.
I feel like that's fair. I might even say you're Andy Richter. I might give you that.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I'll take that.
Maybe. Let me think on that one. Definitely Ed McMahon. You're definitely Ed McMahon level.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
Andy Richter.
All right. I think that's it for tonight. So, and also okay. I'm about to sneeze. I think. That was a doozy. My brain is not heavy anymore. It all shot out the back. Do you remember Wendy, who we used to work with in accounting?
I do.
If people would stifle their sneezes, she would get really mad because supposedly it's not good for you. But she'd always say, you keep doing that, you're going to blow a bubble out the back of your neck.
Blow a bubble out back.
Like, like all the pressure would in a bubble out the back, right?
Yeah, that's terrible.
That was pretty funny.
Thanks for that.
All right. So, go to the magicaltalkinghattalk.com and talk about any of this stuff, the crazy shit I've been talking about or whatever William was talking about before. I've already blanked it out. if you are interested, or even if you're not interested, your thoughts on the idea. Maybe you think it's a really shitty idea to be sticking random other people because we have such a good vibe going.
Oh yeah, the vibe is amazing.
It would throw it off.
If we got
a third person, what if they started defending William from my abuse?
Yeah.
The whole show goes in the toilet then.
What
if they piled on? We might literally kill him. I mean, I think there's a lot of – so give us your views on that, magictalkinghat.com. And otherwise, keep listening, and we will see you again next week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat at gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.